Tonight, you are going to need a pen and a piece of paper. So I know note-taking is normally optional, but it is not tonight. Ooh, do you feel a little controlled? Am I hitting any of your trigger spots? So tonight, I'm going to talk a little bit about a famous character or share a story about a famous character in the Bible. Moses is his name. So shout out what you remember. What stands out to you about Moses? Charlton Heston. Charlton Heston. He looks a lot like, I feel like he looks like Charlton Heston. It is funny.
He's got anger issues.
Burning bush. The Ten Commandments, yes. His faith, uh-huh. What? He heard from God. 40 years of wandering. Never got to the promised land. Parted the Red Sea. 10 plagues. Anything else? He stuttered. Apprehensive leader. Perseverance.
Homicide.
Anything else? He was really old. Yes. Yes. Baby in a basket. Yes. Floating in the Nile. Who found him? A princess. What was the situation that he was raised in? A palace. His biological mother was his nanny. Yeah. Raised like a prince? He survived the persecution. Most other Jewish male babies at that time were all murdered, killed. Mm-hmm. Anything else? Let's see if you got my whole list here. Ooh, you missed one. He is the author of the Pentateuch, or most of it. So author of the first 5 books of the Bible. Which makes sense because he was raised as a prince, and so he would have been one of the very few people in that day and age to have writing and reading abilities. And so he authored most of the first 5 books of the Bible. Anything else? Anybody's built a temple? Mm-hmm. What's a famous Jewish holiday today that's celebrated that he kind of had a part in starting? Passover, yeah. Is there any doubt when we look over his pedigree, all the important things he did, that he was not important to God? Would anybody doubt that he was important to God? No. I don't think any one of us could say, given all of that list of things that he was involved in, all of the ways that he represented faith for us, all of the ways that God personally interacted with him, that he was very important to God. And it sounds like from a few of your comments that you're not surprised at the same time that he had issues. So we might have expected more to see this. Hi, my name is Moses, and I'm a grateful believer who struggles with anger. So we're going to walk really quickly through a few passages that are pretty important in the life of Moses and that kind of typify his struggle with anger, and also that Moses had a relapse problem. So, and I'm going to go so quickly that it would be good in your personal devotion time. Read the whole story. I'm going to start, his story starts in Exodus 2, which is the second book in the Bible, but I'm going to read you a part chapter 2, he was born. And 11 verses later, we see his first issue with anger. Granted, it is 40 years later. But it says, and somebody mentioned this, that one day after Moses had grown up, and we know from other sources that he's about 40 years old, he went out, he was an Egyptian prince at this time, to where his own people, which were the Hebrews, were, and watched them at their hard labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people, and glancing this way and that way and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. Is there any doubt by that verse that he thought at all that what he was doing was okay? He knew. One, he was 40 years old. He knew better. He'd had enough life to know what was right or wrong. This wasn't an impulsive young man acting on his hormones. This was a man who knew better. He premeditated the murder. He looked this way and that, and he made his choice, and then he tried to cover it up afterwards. So we have no doubt that he knew what he was doing was wrong. Do not confuse this message with that violence is okay. What the Egyptian was doing to the slave was terribly wrong, but what Moses did was also a wrong choice. So in no way is this condoning slavery or violence or anything like that. So, you know, the short of it is he runs out to the wilderness to save his own life, and he ends up being there for a really long time. And God comes to him. Somebody mentioned the burning bush, and eventually he goes back to Egypt under God's guidance. And in chapter 32, the people of Israel, he's already brought them out of Egypt, so he's seen all these miracles that God has done. I mean, have you or I seen that many fantastic miracles? He saw the 10 plagues in front of the Egyptian king. He saw the parting. He participated in the parting of the Red Sea. Can you imagine that? And then he's getting these like one-on-one sessions with God up on the mountain. And he's in this process in chapter 32. He's up on the mountain. He's having this one-on-one God time. In fact, these times were so profound that when he exited from them, the glory of the Lord made his face look like a highlighter. It was just bright and shining from that experience. It was profound. And this happened to be the time when he receives the Ten Commandments. And God is engraving on two sides of two stones the Ten Commandments for Moses. And Moses comes down off of this spiritual high, both literally and physically, and he comes down to find that the people of Israel have, or the Israelites, have made a golden calf. So they got impatient. It was 40 days. Apparently that was a long waiting time for them. And they got this great idea. It's hard for me culturally to really attach to why this was such a good idea for them. But they thought, let's burn all our jewelry, or melt all our jewelry and all our gold pieces and make a golden calf, and we'll bow down and worship it. For some reason, that appealed to them. We would have found something else like the internet. I mean, it would have been much better. But they found this, and Moses is ticked off. He is hacked that this is what is happening. What's interesting is like 10 minutes before, okay, maybe it took him a couple days to get off the mountain, but however long it took him to get off the mountain, he had been in this communing spot with God. And the minute he gets out of there, he gets so hacked off that he destroys what God created, the tablets. So he destroys the tablets in his anger. He crushes the calf. He gets so mad. And then, in almost like a humiliating kind of abusive way, he makes the people drink. It says, and he took the calf they had made and burned it in the fire, and then he ground it to powder. I mean, this is a process. He waited for the thing to burn. He ground it up. He scattered it on the water and made the Israelites drink it. It just is this abusive, over-the-top, prolonged anger. It wasn't like I was so mad in the moment, but I waited for the whole thing to burn down. Then I ground it up, which couldn't have been easy in that day, and then I'm going to make you drink it. So, yeah, and at this point, he was over 80 years old. So 40 years has passed. He's having his ongoing issue. Let's turn a little bit ahead. Numbers 11. He's still leading these people, and granted, nobody said this was an easy task. Numbers 11, God, they were in the desert, and so there wasn't a lot of food. But let's think back to this society. It wasn't like they had a Safeway or they went through a drive-through to start with. So getting food was more difficult in this day. And God is dropping it from heaven every day. And the people start to become very just bored. Their palate says, I want a few more things. And so they're grumbling. And it says in chapter 11 of verse 10, it says that Moses heard the people of every family wailing each at the entrance to his tent. The Lord had become exceedingly angry, and Moses was troubled. The word for troubled here really actually means he had evil in between his ears. He was boiling hot inside about this. And we might think, well, God was angry too, and Moses was angry. But then in the following verses, verse 11 through 15, he rails at God. He's angry at God for giving him this role and not making it an easy one. He's angry that it's so hard. Can we relate to that? Have you ever been in a role as a wife or a husband or as a parent, and then you're mad at God for giving you that role and not making it easy? He was overwhelmed with the responsibilities of that task, and he was ticked at God, and he just goes off at God. He says, just, you know, if this is how you're going to treat me, put me to death right now. If I have found favor in your eyes, do not let me face my own ruin. He is madder than a hornet. And apparently, Moses goes on to continue. We know now by chapter 20, there's not too much more time in his life, and we know he lived about 120 years. So again, another large passage of time has gone, and this time the people are thirsty. And God has already shown himself very clearly to Moses and involved him in a miracle in the past. So when the people were thirsty in the past, he told Moses, take your staff and strike a rock, and out of it will come water. And again, the people are thirsty. Same scenario is happening. And he and Aaron, again, they get this one-on-one time with God. I mean, talk about a devotional life. It says they went in verse 6 of chapter 20, Moses and Aaron went from the assembly to the entrance to the tent of meeting and fell face down, and the glory of the Lord appeared to them. And Moses gives him clear instructions. I mean, wouldn't you die for clear instructions sometimes from God? And he tells him very simply what to do. And he says, you're going to take your staff, but you're going to speak to the rock, and this is what's, and water will come out of it. So Moses took his staff, just as God had said, and then he got in front of the people and he said, listen, you rebels, must we bring you water out of this rock? And then he raised his arm and struck the rock twice with his staff. He had a very clear direction from God. But you know what he was mad at God at? That God didn't put his people, those Israelites, in their place. They deserved something different. They were being so naughty, and God didn't do anything about it. Have you ever felt that way towards God? When somebody in your life was not behaving, they were not getting the justice they really deserved in that situation. And you're just more mad at God because they're not getting what they deserve than anything. And Moses was in that place. And in this case, God gives him a consequence. He does not get to go in the promised land as a result of his anger. So Moses, you know, he not only was a great leader, but he had a relapse problem. And so tonight our topic is relapse. And it's great to see, you know, actually God is pretty funny. Because if I were to write this book, I wouldn't include all of these characters. I think I would choose a few more righteous people that got it right. And for whatever reason, God allowed these people to be the ones that he worked through in a powerful way. And he also included their mistakes in here. And so that's such a benefit to us as we get to read over that and say, you know what? I'm not the only one with relapse issues, that this is a human nature problem. It's not really I have a particular difficult time with my issue. It's that you're human, and it's our tendency to relapse. So let's kind of be clear on what relapse is. You know, a lot of you from the drug and alcohol addiction world are really familiar with that terminology, and some of you aren't from that world, and this, you know, you're aware of it, but not quite as intimately. So the definition of relapse is simply doing what you said you ain't gonna do no more. You know, the Bible also talks about relapse besides just this story of Moses. The Bible's full of relapsers, so we can feel at home here. But Paul in Romans 7:15 says, for I do not understand my own actions. Have you ever felt like that? I don't understand how I got here. Why did I do this thing that I did? For I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate. The very thing I'm trying to work on. The very thing I'm trying to work on, which is not eating to cope with my feelings, is the very thing that I go and do. And so that's why I give myself permission to buy chocolate chips, because then I can plan to relapse. You know, I worked in drug and alcohol treatment, and I ran groups. And so what we would do is either at the beginning of the group or the end of the group, I had this little coin purse, and in it I put a poker chip. I was a little uneducated that that might be triggering for some people that might have a concurrent gambling addiction, so looking back, it's pretty funny. But anyway, we drew out poker chips, and on them they said either UA or no UA. And so either I would do it at the beginning of the group, and or at the end. And if I did it at the end, I used the group time often to say, how did you do this last week? Did anybody relapse? You know, what were your triggers this week? Blah, 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 blah. And so if somebody either was found out in a UA that they had relapsed or they fessed up in group that they had relapsed, I would ask the question, which is a natural question, what happened? And I was always surprised at the answer I got. It was usually something like, oh. Or, I used. I was like, I know you used, but what happened? And for a while it was like, are these people just BSing me? Like, do they look at me and think that I'm young and I'm like, and they're just giving me the most stupid answer they can think of? I'm like, how can I rephrase that question? No, really, what happened? And it was like, oh, I was walking along and all of a sudden there's a doobie in my hand. I have no idea how that happened. And it was just that kind of reaction to me, like, well, what do you mean what happened? Like, I used. And so they would be looking like at me like, is she stupid? Like, I used, and that's the whole point. And so I was like, well, is it like there's a line at Safeway and I just don't go to this Safeway and there's like gum and meth and your tabloid and like they just went through the line and they just used? And so it was a process for me to figure out what was happening here where last week they didn't use and this week they did use. And initially, to be honest, I went into it thinking, well, relapsing is a problem that, you know, those drug users have, those alcoholics have. But as I worked through this process that I'm going to teach you tonight, I realized, and reading the Bible, you know, we're all relapsers. And so this was a process that I needed to use in my own life with my own issues, that I do the things I do not want to do. I'm back there time and time again. There's another definition from Marlett. He's a biggie in the A&D world. This is more like mumbo jumbo, but it's an unfolding process in which the resumption of the substance abuse is the last event in a long series of maladaptive, that means bad, responses to internal or external stressors or stimuli. The thing I want you to focus on is it's the last event in a series. Sometimes we talk in A&D treatment about being in relapse. Often happens a long time before you actually relapse. And so I'm going to teach you a process tonight that will be something that you can use in your own life, that you can use with your sponsees, that you can use with accountability partners. And if you have a sponsor that's not working through this process, you can bring this to them and say, help me work through this. This is best done with another person. So sometimes we think of relapse as just an isolated event. Like on this next slide, it's just relapse. But in reality, relapse is a series. It's a chain. So on the back of one of your pieces of paper, they're both blank, go ahead and make yourself a chain that looks kind of like this. And this is meant to be done on a napkin in a restaurant. So you don't have to carry any supplies with you. You don't have to be, you know, have any forms. This is just something you can whip out at any time when you or your sponsee or your accountability partner has relapsed. On our acrostic tonight, if it's important to you to fill out the, you know, the missing blanks, this goes under, we're evaluating. And the Bible tells us it's important to evaluate. In fact, it says in Mark 14:38, watch and pray so that you do not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the body is weak. Amen to that. The body is weak. Somehow I always end up in the same place. So tonight we're focusing on the watch. We want to watch so that we do not fall into temptation. So the first thing we're going to do, and it's two slides forward, we're going to be thinking about what happened in our relapse, and we're going to say, are there any changes in behavior that I've had? Am I doing different stuff? Before that relapse that happened at the end of the chain, did I start to do things differently? You know, a typical one would be like hanging out with old friends and old places. Maybe I'm participating in old coping habits, like I'm watching more TV again, I'm on the internet more, I'm isolating more, I'm just absorbing myself in sports. It might be those old, I'm overworking. What are those old coping habits? It could be that you forgot to re-up your internet security system that you're using to make sure that you don't get onto pornography. It just kind of slipped by. You didn't really be proactive on that. You changed your behavior there. Getting into tempting situations. A common one in our day and age is taking on too much. Did you fill your plate too full? You got so busy that you weren't able to really attend to your recovery, or you were just in lightning speed. What did you start doing differently? Maybe it has to do with your spiritual life. Did you stop reading your Bible? Did you end your quiet time? Stop coming to church? You know, on our acrostic, there's two letters that relate to that. They're reserve a daily quiet time and alone and quiet time. A lot of times we stop doing something that was really key in maintaining our sobriety from whatever our issue is. So reserve a daily quiet time or alone and quiet time. Maybe you stopped your medication. Maybe you dropped out of a service role. So how you use that chart that we had up there is in those three circles, it doesn't matter how many, there may be no behavior change. There may be 10 things that you behave that were behavior change. You can just add on circles. That's the beauty of this chart. You just add on however many circles you need, or you don't put them on there if you don't need them. And what you would do is write in that circle what the change was. So the second thing is, did you have any changes in relationships? You know, is your marriage going through a really rough time? Are you getting in arguments with somebody? Sometimes we don't think about this one, but maybe it's somebody in ministry. Maybe you're working with somebody here at the church and you've been in conflict with them. And it kind of comes as unexpected. You know, we think you go to a church and you meet the people who know God and you should be able to get along with them, and it just isn't going that way. Maybe your kids are acting up or your ex is acting up. Maybe you're having problems at work with your boss or a coworker. What are the things that are changing? And again, a relationship that often changes before we get into relapse is our relationship with Jesus. So on our acrostic, have you been listening to Jesus? Have you been plugging in to God's power? Have you been slowing down long enough to hear God's answer? Listen to Jesus. Plug into God's power through prayer and slow down long enough to hear God's answer. Has your relationship with Jesus changed? Jesus doesn't change. So if there's a change in that relationship, it's on your part. Have you moved away from him somehow? There's a great verse, listen to the Lord and hear what he is saying. So if there were relationship changes, you would actually write what the change is. You don't have to write a novel, you write one word, wife, husband, Bobby, my son, or whatever, Billy, my boss, Ron, my coworker, Jerry, whatever. So you're not going to put a lot in there. The next section, you're going to look at changes in thinking. Has my thinking changed? Have I started to believe things that are going to lead me down a path towards relapse? Maybe it's thinking, oh, I can handle just one drink. Maybe it's downplaying the importance of what you were doing to maintain your sobriety. Oh, I can handle it without going to my group anymore. I can get this one alone. I don't need my accountability partner. I don't need ongoing recovery. That's silly. Sometimes it's thinking you deserve or don't deserve something. You know, I deserve a break. I deserve some relief from this pain that I'm in. So that gives me, I deserve to be treated differently by my spouse. So therefore, or maybe I don't deserve this. You know what? I don't deserve to have my kids treat me this way. I don't deserve to be in a job like this. I deserve something better. Maybe a big one is thinking you're special or you're unique. Oh, I'm a special case. I know that most people need X, Y, and Z, but I'm special. You know, God made me unique. Doesn't the Bible say that? I'm just a unique person. And that's one of the biggest lies, because it's true, but Satan twists it. And that's what Satan does in our lives. He takes a truth and he twists it. It is true that you're special and unique. There is no one genetically who is exactly like you. You are completely special. And God, as he was putting together all of your features, the color of your eyes, the color of your skin, the things that you would be good at, the things that you were terrible at, as he put all of those together to make you, he was thinking, this is exactly how I want this person to be. So yes, you are special and unique. But Satan twists that, just like he did in the Garden of Eden. And he twists a truth and makes it a lie. And he says, oh, I'm special. The regular rules don't apply to me. I don't need to do recovery like other people do. Or other people need that. I just don't. I've got it. I'm good. The last one is mood changes. Is your mood different? Have you fallen into a depression? Are you feeling hopeless? Are you feeling overwhelmed? Are you having some mental health symptoms that were pretty well controlled that have kind of surged again? You're into a mania state. Are you bored? Are you angry? So again, you would write, man, my mood, I've been really sad lately. I didn't realize, I had this loss in my life. I lost this job. And yeah, it's been hard financially, but really, I've been so sad inside. And so you just write the word sad in the circle. And again, on any one of these sections, there's no magic number. There might be none. There might be 10. The magic is getting them down, is walking through it with another person so you're becoming aware of what are all those things. Relapse didn't happen out of the blue. That joint did not fall in your hand from heaven. That's not how it works. So, at the risk of being a little heretical, let's just assume that Moses sat down with his sponsor. And we're going to think, and he said, you know that I struggle with anger. This has been an ongoing problem for me. I mean, I've walked on this earth for 120 years. I had the closest relationship to God that was possible. The opportunities existed for me, and yet, you know, I get myself in between a rock and a hard place, and again, I blow it, and I do the thing that I don't want to do. And so, you know, Moses is able to identify, and we're going to look at his last relapse, that he had an anger explosion. You know, he hit a rock 3 times very hard, and he was verbally abusive to his people. So he's identifying, that was the relapse issue for me. It's good to be clear on what the relapse issue was. And so we're going to go back. Well, has he been doing anything differently? And so we see on the next slide that as his sponsor worked through this, he said, you know what? I was so tired of those complaining people that I was spending more time in my tent than normal. I mean, I just couldn't take it hearing them one more day. And so, you know, to be honest, I was avoiding corporate worship because I didn't want to see him at church. I didn't want to see him anywhere. And so I was isolating. And his sponsor says, well, that's very good, Moses. You're very insightful. I think this is really going to help. Stick with me in this process. And so the sponsor asks, well, Moses, you know, do you think any of relationships in your life changed recently? And he said, well, you know, Miriam died. Like a chapter before, Miriam, his sister, the one who brought the basket into the water with his mom, the one who waited by the water to see when the princess was come, she had been with him since he had been in that basket. And she was with him on his journey with the Israelite people. And she was the Jewish people, and she had just died. And he would say, yeah, I am missing Miriam. She died. You know, my companion through life. She'd been with me all the way. And you know, I've been quarreling with about everybody. I mean, they have just gotten under my skin, and I think I've spent more time quarreling in these last couple months than I have in a long time. So yeah, I think my relationships have changed. And his sponsor would say, that's really good. You're doing good work here, Moses. The sponsor's going to say, Moses, you know, do you think there's anything you were thinking differently? Moses might say, no, you know, I think I was good. I don't think I was thinking anything differently. I'm thinking. And the sponsor might say, well, you know, I remember you saying things like, I don't deserve this stuff. And Moses kind of gets in the mode. He said, yeah, you're right. I was thinking that a lot. In fact, I was thinking, I cannot go on another day. Another way to say that is, I need relief from this pain. And I also felt like this situation is so unfair. Why did I have to lead these people, and why is my task so hard? And I was also thinking, God, he should really give it to these people. And the sponsor says, oh, Moses, you're doing such a great job. Hang with me. Is there anything, do you think, that you were feeling differently? You know, Miriam died, and Moses, again, is identifying, yeah, you know, I've been pretty depressed, and I've been lonely, and I've been really sad. And we see that all of these things led together. His blowing up and being verbally abusive towards the people, calling them names and hitting the rock wasn't something that just happened out of the blue, that just fell down from heaven and just came over him like an evil spirit. It was something that he had been nursing for a while, and that's what relapse really is. Now, the beauty of this is for insight, that you can go, wow, those are the things that are my trigger spots. Wow, those are the things that really make me vulnerable. But the beauty of this, and on the next slide, went way back when he first started noting those things, that he had been isolating in his tent to get away from complaining people, that he had not been going to corporate worship. He had an opportunity. You know, he could have, on the next slide, we see that he could have gone to a small group. He could have, and again at the risk of being heretical, he could have called his accountability partner. Maybe he could have talked it over with Aaron. Maybe there was somebody in his life he could have said, I need prayer in this situation because I can't even stand to go to church right now. It's just killing me. I can't be around those people one more day. So there was an opportunity. So each one of these links are not only insights into what went wrong, but they're opportunities to brainstorm, and the time the person is most open to brainstorming is when you've just messed up. Because once you've started this process, sometimes you're not open. You're saying, it's not a problem. It's not a big deal. I'm not going to church. It's not a big deal. But when somebody has relapsed, there's an acknowledgement that something went wrong. And so this is the opportunity to come in with another pass. So he could have gone to small group. He could have called his accountability. And in the end, the outcome would have been different. So on the next slide, we see he would have had some kind of an outcome that would have been different. Maybe he would have found some comfort from talking with his accountability partner, able to come up with a plan to handle these complaining people. So I lead you through this process to try and give you a very hands-on, practical tool to use with yourself, to use with people that you're sponsoring, to go through with your accountability. And in the end, the goal is that you would enjoy your growth. And that's the last one on your acrostic. Relapse is likely going to be a part of most of our journeys. I wish it wasn't. It's been a part of mine, though. I can't tell you how many bags of chocolate chips I've gone through. I hate those things that say the pounds of sugar we eat a year. I just don't even want to know. That is so disgusting that each one of us eats 10 pounds of sugar a year. But believe, I have a feeling that I'm taking my portion. But we want to learn from our relapses and use them to help us grow closer to God and not lose that opportunity and be able to enjoy the growth that we've experienced. Let me close in prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, I just come before you as somebody who struggles with relapse, who wants to do the right thing, who tries to make changes in my life so it happens. Lord, I pray that your Holy Spirit would help me as I work through every relapse that I have to learn more about the ways that I'm getting my needs met apart from you. Help me to become more and more dependent on you. And I pray the same for every person in this room. In Jesus' name, amen.